So the whole clan is in Egypt, living in the land of Goshen. And it says in verse 1, "Then Joseph came and told Pharaoh and said, 'My father and my brethren and their flocks and their herds and all that they have are come out of the land of Canaan, and behold, they are in the land of Goshen.' And he took some of his brethren, even 5 men, and presented them unto Pharaoh." So he picked the handsomest, nicest of his brethren, and he presented them to Pharaoh. Now you want to put your best foot forward. You don't want to be dragging the black sheep of the family along, you know. So anyway, Pharaoh said to his brethren, "What is your occupation?" And they said unto Pharaoh, "Thy servants are shepherds, both we and our fathers." And they said moreover unto Pharaoh, "For to sojourn in the land are we come. For thy servants have no pasture for their flocks, for the famine is sore in the land of Canaan. Now therefore we pray thee, let thy servants dwell in the land of Goshen." All right, so they basically emphasized this shepherd thing. Now, Joseph told them to do this in the previous chapter. He said, make a big deal over the fact that you're shepherds. Because once he finds out you're shepherds, he's going to want to keep you away, right? Because shepherds are an abomination to the Egyptians. And so as a result, he'll let you live in the land of Goshen. All right, and so Joseph wants to keep his family separate even while they are in the midst. And this is the tension that the children of God always have in this world. On the one hand, we are in the world, but on the other hand, we are not of the world. All right, in the world, but not of the world. And therefore, we must learn the art, the spiritual art, of getting along in the world and mixing together with unregenerate people, while at the same time keeping ourselves separate with regard to our faith and our understanding and our knowledge of right and wrong and good and evil. One of the biggest problems that we have in the church today, and it is a problem that is created by affluence. And the problem is we become so worldly as Christians that we don't even know we're being worldly. And we wonder why we don't have spiritual power in our lives. Why we don't have zeal for the Lord. Well, because we have so kind of, in a sneaky and insidious way, we have so mixed ourselves up in the world that we have worldly, secular, godless ideas flowing around in our heads, and we don't even know it. We don't even know it. So, here in our story, Joseph wants to have his family safe under his care in Egypt. But he wants to keep them separate. And that's the art. How do you live in the world and interact with people in the world and yet maintain your godly separation? All right. Some people go hog wild the other way, you know, like the Amish. You know, they just reject the whole modern world thing, and they make untold, unnecessary problems for themselves because they deal with the question by saying, "We're not supposed to be part of the world at all," and so they create a kind of a a monastic separation, just like in the days of the monasteries, where people would leave the world and live in these cloisters. All right, now that's not the right thing to do either. To be totally secularized so that you don't even know you're being worldly is a bad thing. And to be so totally spiritualized that you are totally separated from the world is an overreaction on the other side. The true Christian lives in a constant tension. The world is always tugging at us from this way, and the Lord is always tugging at us from this way. And we struggle continuously through our lives to create that balance, to maintain it. And sometimes we do a good job, and sometimes we don't. All right. So, Pharaoh, verse 5. And Pharaoh spake unto Joseph, saying, Thy father and thy brethren are come unto thee. The land of Egypt is before thee. In the best of the land make thy father and thy brethren to dwell. In the land of Goshen let them dwell. And if thou knowest any men of activity among them, then make them rulers over my cattle. You know, this is kind of like a funny little thing here, because Joseph has so engineered things that Pharaoh thinks it's his idea. You know what you've got to do? Put them in the land of Goshen. Yeah, Goshen would be a great place for them, you know. And it's like Pharaoh's got this idea. You know, it's like Captain Binghamton, remember McHale's Navy, where back in the 60s? Yeah, maybe some of you are too young. But, you know, the whole idea was that, you know, McHale and his cohorts were always playing the captain. And the idea was that the captain always had to be made to feel that everything was his idea and that he got the credit for it, when in fact, you know, he had no ideas whatsoever. Well, anyway, this is kind of a little humorous thing. Joseph is setting Pharaoh up to have an expected outcome. And Pharaoh then says, you know what we got to do? We got to put these people in the land of Goshen, you know. And Joseph's like, great idea, Pharaoh, great idea. And he says, if any men of activity among them, make them rulers over my cattle. So if you got any sharp guys in your family, they can be rulers over my cattle as well. Joseph brought in Jacob, his father, and set him before Pharaoh, and Jacob blessed Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said unto Jacob, How old art thou? And Jacob said unto Pharaoh, The days of the years of my pilgrimage are 130 years. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life, and have not attained unto the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their pilgrimage. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from before Pharaoh. Now this is an interesting passage for a number of reasons. Number one, because it tells us that when Jacob came in, he blessed Pharaoh. You know, the idea that we get of the ancient patriarchs was that they were a bunch of traveling nomads, which they were. But we don't really realize that they were actually mighty men of valor. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Each one of these people not only had an extended family, but they had an army. Right? They were military powers to be reckoned with. And so here, Jacob comes into the splendid presence of Pharaoh, and instead of Pharaoh blessing Jacob, Jacob blesses Pharaoh, and Pharaoh is not offended by it. Why? Because Jacob is a somebody, and Pharaoh knows it. All right. This is the thing you need to remember about the patriarchs of old. They were not just wandering nobodies. They were very powerful men. You know, there's the story earlier in the book of Genesis where Abraham's nephew Lot gets kidnapped. And Abraham has to go and rescue him. And he takes his fighting men, I forget the exact number of them right now, but he takes his army of men and they go and they do battle and they rescue Lot from being kidnapped. And it's on the way home from this battle that Abraham meets up with Melchizedek. And we've talked about that in the past. We won't go into it now. But the idea is Abraham had an army, right? And he was a somebody. And the patriarchs, look here, Jacob says, he says, I'm 130 years old. And then he says, few and evil have been the days of the years of my life. I've not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers. The patriarchs always lived longer than the ordinary people of the society. People would look at the patriarchs and they would, you know, that guy's 130 years old. And he doesn't look a day over 60, you know. Jacob was not a wizened, shriveled old man who was just on the verge of death. He was still able to interact. Now, what will happen is he will soon die. But he will not die because he has become thoroughly enfeebled. All right? He will die because it's God's time for him to die. But you know, keep the picture of these patriarchs in your mind, that they were extremely impressive human beings. They were powerful, influential, and impressive. People looked at them and goes, those people are not like us. Alright? Alright. Verse 7. Verse 11. Joseph placed his father and his brethren and gave them possession in the land of Egypt, in the best of the land, in the land of Ramesses, as Pharaoh had commanded. And Joseph nourished his father and his brethren and all his father's household with bread according to their families. So they settle in the land of Goshen, which is also referred to as the land of Ramesses. And there was no bread in all the land, for the famine was very sore, so that the land of Egypt and all the land of Canaan fainted by reason of the famine. So things are getting bad. You know, that those 5 years or 7 years of famine are getting tough. Even despite the fact that Joseph has stored up plenty, yet the years of famine are getting harder and harsher. All right? Joseph gathered all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan for the corn which they bought. And Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. So Joseph causes Pharaoh to be enriched greatly. Now Joseph's concern is not ultimately with Pharaoh. Joseph's concern is for his family's welfare. And so Joseph is going to continue to be a blessing to Pharaoh for the sake of his family. All right? And so Pharaoh is making out like a bandit here. Verse 15, and when money failed in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, all the Egyptians came unto Joseph and said, give us bread, for why should we die in thy presence? For the money faileth. All our money is gone. We need to eat. Help. And Joseph said, give your cattle, and I will give you for your cattle if the money fail. And they brought their cattle unto Joseph. And Joseph gave them bread in exchange for horses and for flocks and for the cattle of the herds and for the asses. And he fed them with bread for all their cattle for that year. And when the year was ended, they came unto him the second year and said unto him, "We will not hide it from my Lord how that our money is spent. My Lord also hath our herds of cattle. There is not aught left in the sight of my Lord but our bodies and our lands." So we got nothing left but our bodies and our property. "Wherefore shall we die before thine eyes, both we and our land? Buy us and our land for bread, and we and our land will be servants unto Pharaoh." So the people come to Joseph and offer to sell themselves into slavery in order to survive. All right, and give us seed that we may live and not die, in that the land be not desolate. And Joseph brought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh, for the Egyptians sold every man his field, because the famine prevailed over them. So the land became Pharaoh's. And as for the people, he removed them to cities from one end of the borders of Egypt even to the other end. Only the land of the priests bought he not, for the priests had a portion assigned to them of Pharaoh and did eat their portion which Pharaoh gave them. Therefore they sold not their lands. Then Joseph said unto the people, "Behold, I have bought you this day and your land for Pharaoh. Lo, here is seed for you, and ye shall sow the land. And it shall come to pass in the increase that ye shall give the fifth part unto Pharaoh, and four parts shall be your own. For seed of the field, and for your food, and for them of your household, and for food for your little ones." And they said, "Thou hast saved our lives. Let us find grace in the sight of my Lord. We will be Pharaoh's servants." And Joseph made it a law over the land of Egypt to this day that Pharaoh should have the fifth part, except the land of the priests only, which became not Pharaoh's. All right, so we see here, as the famine continues in its severity, one thing after another, the money runs out, and then the cattle are sold for, and then finally their lands and their own bodies are sold into Egypt and become Pharaoh. So in other words, the whole country of Egypt is a country of slaves, and everything belongs to Pharaoh. Right? And this is really the idea behind socialism, you know, in our modern world. All right, the idea that everything really belongs to the government. Right? Now, this may seem like a little bit of a departure,
but it's not.
Modern progressive leftists, when they think about human rights, they think that human rights are granted by the government. All right? I know that in the Declaration of Independence it says that we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. And what Jefferson meant by that was our human rights come from God and are given to us. Nobody can take them away. They are unalienable. Nobody can take our rights away from them, and nobody gives them to us. Leftist progressives believe that since there really is no God, all right, and since we have this crazy, overblown idea of the separation of church and state in our modern world, that you can't bring God into anything. So the only other source of rights, therefore, is the government. And so when you listen to the way people on the left in our country, when you listen to the way they talk about rights, rights are something that people suddenly discover and that they suddenly grant. Right? And I'll give you a perfect example of this. Suddenly, out of the clear blue sky, the government discovers a right to abortion. Right? And discovers it in some little crazy little thing in the Constitution. All right? And then the government permits people to exercise this right. Right? And then now we have the whole thing about gay marriage, right? That the government suddenly discovers that there is a right for people to marry other members of the same sex. Where do they get this idea from? They pull it out of their rear ends, essentially, and they make believe that they found it because they consider rights to be something that the government grants people. Rights are not something that are granted by the government. The government exists to protect and secure our rights that we have from God in the realm of nature. All right? The government can't take away your rights. All right? And the government doesn't give them to you. The government's job is to secure your rights to you. And anyway, so modern socialism and leftist progressivism is really kind of like this Egyptian situation where Pharaoh, the government, owns everything, and he grants you well-being and safety in exchange for owning you. You see? All right, verse 27. Now that was a digression, right? We got a little bit into politics there, a little digression, but I thought it was good. Israel dwelt in the land of Egypt, in the country of Goshen, and they had possessions therein and grew and multiplied exceedingly. And Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. So he's like 130 when he comes to Egypt, right? It was 130. And now he lives 17 more years. And the whole age of Jacob was 147 years. And the time drew nigh that Israel must die. And he called his son Joseph and said unto him, if now I have found grace in thy sight, put, I pray thee, thy hand under my thigh, and deal kindly and truly with me. Bury me not, I pray thee, in Egypt. But I will lie with my fathers, and thou shalt carry me out of Egypt, and bury me in their burying place. And he said, I will do as thou hast said. And he said, swear unto me, and he swear unto him. And Israel bowed himself upon his bed's head. All right, so the way that you, in a family, remember, Jacob or Israel is the great patriarch. All right, and when he's going to extract an oath from one of his sons, the son has to place his hands under the man's thighs. All right? And that has something to do with the begetting power. All right? All the sons of Israel and Abraham and Isaac begat their whole clan and nation. And so placing your hand under the thighs has to do with that power of begetting. And so Joseph has to place his hands under Jacob's thighs and swear to Jacob that he will not allow Jacob to be buried in Egypt, but will carry his body out of Egypt and bury him in the family burial plot back in the land of Canaan. All right? So, it's kind of, you know, kind of funny to us, you know, put your hand under my thigh, and it's like, okay, if I must. But you know, it had to do with the patriarch and his progeny, and that the oath that you're swearing has to do with the future of the progeny. Right, and therefore you put your hand under the thigh to show your connection and obligation to those who are begotten by the begetter, which is the patriarch. All right. 48, chapter 48. Came to pass after these things that one told Joseph, "Behold, thy father is sick." And he took with him his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. And one told Jacob and said, "Behold, thy son Joseph cometh unto thee." And Israel strengthened himself and sat upon the bed. And Jacob saith unto Joseph, "God Almighty appeared unto me at Luz in the land of Canaan and blessed me, and said unto me, Behold, I will make thee fruitful and multiply thee, and I will make of thee a multitude of people, and will give this land to thy seed after thee for an everlasting possession. And now thy two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, which were born unto thee in the land of Egypt before I came unto thee into Egypt, are mine. As Reuben and Simeon, they shall be mine." You see that? Jacob saying to him, your two boys, Ephraim and Manasseh, they belong to me. All right? They are now going to be given the status of being among the tribes of the sons of Israel, and they will be patriarchs in their own right, in their own tribes. So now the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh are added to the tribes of Israel, and so he says they're mine. He adopts them as his own. "And thy issue which thou begettest after them shall be thine, and shall be called after the name of their brethren in their inheritance. But as for me, when I came from Paddan, Rachel died by me in the land of Canaan in the way, when yet there was but a little way to come unto Ephrath. And I buried her there in the way of Ephrath. The same is Bethlehem." Woo! See that? All of a sudden, we're talking about Jesus. All this family stuff is connected directly to Jesus. And so we have Rachel mentioned, and the family genealogy mentioned, the promise of God mentioned, that God gave to Jacob, and now all of a sudden we see the mention of Bethlehem, the burying place near Bethlehem, and we are meant to think ahead to Jesus and say this is all connected to Jesus. All right? The purpose for which God chose Israel was to bring the Messiah into the world for the whole world through the people of Israel. Right? And that's the point. All right. "And Israel beheld Joseph's sons and said, Who are these?" And you'll see here, he's getting ready to die, but he's still not decrepit. and utterly weak. He's very much in charge of this entire interchange, right? As we see. Joseph said to his father, they are my son whom God hath given me in this place. And he said, bring them, I pray thee, unto me, and I will bless them. Now the eyes of Israel were dim for age, and he could not see. And he brought them near unto him, and he kissed them and embraced them. And Israel said unto Joseph, I had not thought to see thy face. And lo, God hath shown me also thy seed. And Joseph brought them out from between his knees and bowed himself with his face to the earth. And again, here we have this whole thing that the two boys are standing between Joseph's knees. And he brings them out from between his knees and presents them to his father. And the idea here is that I present to you those whom I have begotten so that they may be yours. You see that? All right? That's important that you notice that. Those old-fashioned customs or something. Yikes. Verse 13, and Joseph took them both, Ephraim in his right hand toward Israel's left hand, and Manasseh in his left hand toward Israel's right hand. And he brought them near unto him. And Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it upon Ephraim's head, who was the younger, and his left hand upon Manasseh's head, guiding his hands wittily, for Manasseh was the firstborn. Right, so Jacob perceives the will of God here. What God often does is he intentionally changes the normal order of things and chooses the one for dominance that the world wouldn't choose. All right, in the world, it's always the eldest who becomes the chief blessed one and the chief leader. But every once in a while, what God does is he mixes up the order here. And Jacob, or Israel, is in on this. He perceives it. So he puts his hands out wittingly, and he blessed Joseph and said, God, before whom my father Abraham and Isaac did walk, the God which fed me all my life long unto this day, the angel which redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads, and let my name be named on them, and the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. And when Joseph saw that his father laid his right hand upon the head of Ephraim, it displeased him. And he held up his father's hand to remove it from Ephraim's head unto Manasseh's head. And Joseph said unto his father, not so, my father, for this is the firstborn. Put thy right hand upon his head. And his father refused and said, I know it, my son. I know it. He also shall become a people, and he also shall be great. But truly this younger brother shall be greater than he, and his seed shall become a multitude of nations. And he blessed them that day, saying, in thee shall Israel bless, saying, God make thee as Ephraim and as Manasseh. And he set Ephraim before Manasseh. And Israel said unto Joseph, behold, I die, but God shall be with you and bring you again unto the land of your fathers. Moreover, I have given to thee one portion above thy brethren, which I took out of the land of the Amorite with my sword and with my bow. All right, so he blesses the two sons of Joseph, choosing, intentionally choosing the younger one to outstrip the older one. All right, and you know, you'll see, like, for example, one of the things that happens is that there is, later on in the history of Israel, there is a woman who is a harlot. Her name is Rahab. And Rahab the harlot protects the Israelite spies from the Jebusites in the city of Jerusalem, and she helps them to escape. Right, and she secures a promise from them that when they come and take over the land, they will show kindness to her, and they promise her. She then later becomes part of the genealogy of Jesus. So when you read Matthew chapter 1, and you're going through the genealogy from Abraham to Jesus, right there in that genealogy is Rahab, right? She becomes part of the lineage of Jesus. Another unexpected person who becomes part of the lineage of Jesus is a woman by the name of Ruth. In the Old Testament, Ruth is a Moabite woman. And the Israelites and the Moabites always hated one another. But she professes faith in the God of Israel, and she forsakes her own nation and people and goes with Naomi back to the land of Israel, and she becomes a believer in the Lord God of Israel. And she ultimately marries a guy named Boaz, who is part of the lineage of the tribe of Judah. And Ruth and Boaz become the great grandparents of King David. And so you go from Judah through Rahab, through Ruth the Moabitess, to David, to Jesus. See that? And so it's a way of showing that God's way is a way of grace. It's not the way of the human way of doing things. It is the divine way of doing things, and it's all grace. All right. Now, let's see. All right, we got a few moments. Let's get into chapter 49. I had big plans today. I was going to finish the whole thing. Ha! Jacob mocks me. All right. Jacob called unto his sons and said, "Gather yourselves together that I may tell you that which shall befall you in the last days." So Jacob is going to give his final blessing to each of his kids, and he's going to tell them about themselves. Right? And some of this is going to be great news, and some of it's not going to be so great for the people who hear it. "Gather yourselves together and hear, ye sons of Jacob, and hearken unto Israel your father. Reuben, thou art my firstborn and my might, and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity, and the excellency of power. Unstable as water, thou shalt not excel, because thou wentest up to thy father's bed, and then defilest thou it. He went up to my couch." "Ah, you thought I didn't know about that," he says to Reuben. That what Reuben did was to go to his father's concubine and have sexual relations with his father's concubine. That seems like a weird and perverse thing to do. In ancient times, that's the way that you challenge the power of the leader. When you wanted to assert yourself as the leader, you went to your father's bed. That is, you took your father's wife or his concubine or somebody that was your father's, and you defiled them. And by saying so, you committed an act of rebellion against your father, and you assert yourself as the replacement for your father. Right? Now, Israel's, Reuben's gambit failed. And so even though Reuben is the firstborn, what Jacob says to him here is that you will not excel. You do not have a bright future as the eldest of the children of Israel. All right. Verse 5. Simeon and Levi are brethren. Instruments of cruelty are in their habitation. O my soul, come not thou into their secret. Unto their assembly, mine honor, be not thou united. For in their anger they slew a man, and in their self-will they dig down a wall. Cursed be their anger, for it was fierce, and their wrath, for it was cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. So, he says, these guys are cruel and vengeful, and therefore they are not to be reckoned among the powerful in the land of Israel. I will scatter them in Israel. And so Simeon kind of gets absorbed in Judah. And Levi is the tribe that becomes the priestly tribe. And they don't even have a possession in the land of Israel. They don't get a portion of the land. So it all goes back to the fact that they slew a man in their wrath and in their cruelty. Right, verse 8. Judah, thou art he whom thy brethren shall praise. Thy hand shall be in the neck of thine enemies. Thy father's children shall bow down before thee. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, thou art gone up. He stooped down, he couched as a lion, and as an old lion, who shall rouse him up? So Judah is compared to a lion, you know, and the king of the forest, you know, king of the jungle, the lion. And the idea is that Judah is going to be the head tribe of all Israel, right? But not only that, look at verse 10. The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh come. And unto him shall the gathering of the people be. Now, what does that mean? It means that Judah will continue to be the chief tribe, the ruling tribe from whom all the rightful kings come, until Shiloh comes. Who is Shiloh? You know who Shiloh is, right? Jesus. Right. What does Shiloh mean? Why is he called Shiloh? Shiloh is a Hebrew word that means rest giver. Rest giver. And we know that our Lord Jesus said in his preaching, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." So, here, Jesus is saying that he is the rest giver, the Shiloh, that was prophesied back in the book of Genesis chapter 49 that Judah will continue to rule over Israel until Shiloh comes. And that is till the Messiah comes. And unto him, the Messiah, shall the gathering of the people be, binding his foal unto the vine, and his ass's colt to the choicest vine. He washed his garment in wine, and his clothes in the blood of grapes. His eyes shall be red with wine, and his teeth white with milk. Now, all of that is to simply say that the Messiah will be utterly successful in doing what God sent him to do, and that he will preside over great blessedness. The idea that you can bind your foal to a vine means that the vine is so big and so plenteous and so strong that there's no danger that it be harmed. All right? And so and the vineyard is a source of great blessing to the world. All right? The grapes of the vineyard. And same thing with milk. And so the idea that his eyes will be red with wine and his teeth white with milk, this shows the blessings of the kingdom of grace. I know it's kind of obscure, you know, but that's really what it's pointing to. That when the Messiah comes, he will grant, like, I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon me and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in spirit, and ye shall find rest unto your souls. The idea is the peace, the security, and the grace of God that comes through faith in the Messiah. All right?